When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You're now listening to The Jillian Michaels Show.
All right. Finishing my last bite of lunch because we're out of our mind today. I'm out of my mind. Sorry. Everyone else here was normal. Andy's in the studio with us today.
Yay!
Yep. I'm just going to hit you guys with this one.
Okay.
Have you ever tried to prevent somebody from making a mistake? Is that a trick question? A loved one, family member, a friend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Has it ever worked?
No. But if they would have just listened to me.
It doesn't work, man. I bring this up, and I love, obviously, she's my little sister. I love my little sister. But this, to me, is like something that I am having the hardest time processing. So my little sister, who's a, quote, academic, loves school. School is my gym, right? This is what she says to me. And she's very smart. She's a straight-A student, although the college she chose had no grades. So she chooses Sarah Lawrence, the most expensive school in the country, right?
Yep.
Now, I agreed to pay it because it was like her dream to go to an Ivy League school. And I was like, you know what? This kid worked her butt off. And she ended up, I said to her, I was like, listen, for every drop of financial grants, not debt, grants or aid that you get given, I will pay you a third of that. So I was like trying to motivate her. Like if you get a $20,000 grant, I'll give you whatever, $7,000, $6,500 to live off of, et cetera. And I paid for her, and she did. She got grants, and I paid for her whole bachelor's degree. We get all the way through. You've missed this. Lucky you, Autumn. Oh, Nicole's witnessed it. We get all the way through. She graduates from Sarah Lawrence and says, I need my master's degree. And I go, well, okay. And she's like, well, you don't understand. And you know what? I don't. Hello, you're talking to a college dropout, right? So, and I understand the importance of education. But I was like, well, are you going to be a doctor? No. Are you going to be a lawyer? No. Are you going to get your business, you know, degree, a degree in business? No. And I was like, well, okay. And I'm like, but maybe you should do some homework here, because I think in some cases, you know, depending on the field you're going into, people are going to hire the person with more experience. And while you are in school, other kids are going to be getting more experience and they're going to get a jump on you. And I was like, and Lauren, I'm like, I paid for 4 years of school. I've given you, you know, money. I've told you to save it. I told you to work during the summers and you were gallivanting all over the world with your friends. I'm not paying for this one. So I don't care. You know, I'm doing it and I'll be fine and this, that, the other. And I was like, okay. So she comes back to me. I have a question to ask you. Yes. I need you to co-sign a loan for $60,000. I died. I was like, I'm sorry. For what? My master's degree needs to be from Oxford, which, by the way, happens to be where, hello, her boyfriend lives. Mm-hmm. Has to be from Oxford. That's not why it has to be from Oxford. They're the only ones that have this program in social media. And it's about the science of the social media, internet, this, that, the other. And I have to have this degree, and it's $60,000. I was like, you're out of your mind. You can go to UCLA for $11,000 a year for 2 years, it's $22,000, and you're a resident, and I'm sure you can get financial aid. Because she's half Latin. She's half she's a quarter Mexican, a quarter Venezuelan, and then she's half Arab. My dad was. So we're half siblings, obviously. But and she's a very smart kid.
Very.
I'm like, you could get aid. This isn't necessary. I don't care. Here's the best part. I don't want to be mean, Jill, but I don't care what you say. This is what I'm doing. And I go, well, you know what, dude? Fair enough. But I'm not going to co-sign this. I was like, this is going to turn into $80,000 worth of debt. And she's doing it anyway. And I looked at Heidi and I went, oh my God, I have done everything I can to make sure that this kid graduated from school yep. with zero debt, because I know how crippling
yep.
it is for people. And I was like, you know what? I said during the summers, Lauren, you know, I feel like you should be home working. And she's off in China teaching English, you know, she's like, and it's the opportunity of a lifetime. I'm like, but you need to make money. I get that's what you want. But you want to get a master's degree. I'm not paying for it. You need to be saving money. Because $40,000 is for the school. $20,000 is to live off of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, hey, I gave you. You know, I paid all your bills and I gave you $15,000 extra dollars a year. You could have saved some of that. You didn't have to go to the Middle East. You didn't have to go to China. You could have come home and worked your butt off, expense free, and saved this money. So you didn't have to borrow that 20 grand. I'm not bailing you out of this. You could go to school at UCLA. I'm dying inside. I'm dying because I know, because she's smart, but she's not, like, she's still a child.
That's the key. What you
she
just
literally
said.
Is a child. She's 22.
Well, that's why
she's a child.
I know her well. She's very, very smart, but she is that smart mind who has a boyfriend, and that's maybe the Oxford angle. But she's still 22, and I just feel, you know what? You're not financing the mistake. That's where I'm proud of you, is that you're not.
I'm dying inside.
I bet
dying inside. And I'm like, but the problem is that when I say she's a child, I don't mean she's immature or juvenile.
No,
I mean, she's literally 22 years old.
Yep.
She's a child. Yep. Like, and I'm like, she has no idea what it's like to pay your bills or to have debt. She doesn't know yet. And I'm like, oh my God. And then I I'm like, oh my God, because I paid for all of this. She's like, awesome. I'm debt free. So I have the ability to take on $80,000. And I'm like, not only did I not prevent it, I've facilitated it. I facilitated it. Because had she not, by the way, had gone to Sarah Lawrence, had she had to go to UCLA, and had to pay for some of it, she would have enough debt where she'd be like, dear God, I don't need to take on $80,000 worth of debt. I'm already in the hole. And she would have had to have done, had to have proceeded completely differently. And I'm just like, oh, this is my fault.
No.
And here I was thinking I was a hero. And it's not totally my fault, but I look at, like, everything I do. Like, even, like, for example, like with Heidi. This is the kind of woman, I'm sorry, and I know there are a lot of you out there. And I wish I was more like you. I'm unfortunately way more like your husband. Andy, you relate to Heidi. You're going through this right now. Where it's like, everything is for the kids. Everything. And she feels guilty if she doesn't spend every second with them. I won't have someone else raising my children. I'm like, honey, most women work.
Yep.
They work, honey. They have to be at work at 9. They get home at 6. They see their kids for a frenzied hour in the morning and 2 frenzied hours at night.
Yeah.
I'm like, I get 4 hours a day with the kids. It's like that hour in the morning, and then I try to be done. You know, we try to make everything, you know, these hard outs on everything, so I can spend 4 to 7 or 5 to 8 with them, and I get 4 hours. And it's like, but because I've done this whole thing where I'm like, okay, you know, we have all this help. You don't have to. So she can have time for herself. The more time I free up for her, the more guilty she feels. Like, she has to be a complete slave to motherhood.
I think, though, what this relates to.
I'm making it worse.
You and I have a common friend who we can't acknowledge the guys she dates, or she'll keep dating those type of guys.
Yes.
Okay, so there's our third example in
perfect.
Our life.
Oh, my God. That's a perfect example. Who shall remain nameless. The guy, she dates a freak, and then we get him out of the picture, okay? Then she gets a text from another freak, and I go, okay, bud, hey, see that text from said freak? Red flag. Here's what we do. Run the other way.
Run!
What does she do? Sleeps with him 2 days later.
Yes. So you got to be careful in thinking that it's so your fault. People are going to be who they are regardless if you finance, support.
They are.
Or cut them off.
Yes.
They're on a trajectory on that path and they're going to stand firm.
You got it.
No matter what.
No matter
and that's
what.
Yeah. And so all we can do is say, I'm not going to partake in it or I don't want to hear about it or I can't condone it. And that's the only thing you can do.
It is. It is. And I think for me, I see something and I see how much it hurts people, right? Because this, I mean, I'm like, oh my God, you're going to be a 24-year-old with $80,000 worth of debt. This is going to cripple you. It's going to cripple you. And it's like, I mean, I'm like, okay. I mean, and then, and I want to stop it, right? Or I see Heidi who's just run so ragged and I'm like, I've given you, we have a housekeeper, a nanny, and she still is like, must be with kids all the time. I'm like, put them in camp. They need to be in camp. No, my children, the precious. I'm like, the preciouses don't want to be with you every second of the day. The preciouses need to get out of the house because they're driving me bonkers. And not only that, they're going bananas. They need to be around other kids. They need out of the house. My babies. I mean, it's just, it's like, it's insane. And yet she's so tired and so run ragged. And I'm like, I need your help. And all these things that are happening in our life, but you can't help me because you're so busy being like, must spend every second with the kids. I need, no, it doesn't matter. And it's the same thing. Like you watch your friend and you watch them get just devastated. I'm fighting this evil dude in court. He stole $8,000 from me. I'm afraid to go to the courthouse. And you, I'm like, how can we prevent that? You cannot prevent it, which comes back to the same thing that we always talk about is like helplessness.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't stand the feeling. I can't stand it.
It's hard for you. I know more than the average person too.
It's unbearable.
I know it's hard for you.
Well, how do you get okay with it?
You don't. You just got to, you still have to go through the motions of saying, I won't participate in it. And that's my sanity. And then you do go crazy. I know you. I know you lose sleep at night when you can't help. I know. And you are a rescuer and you are that person and you will see a need and you will meet it.
I just can't feel powerless. I hate to feel powerless.
I know you do. I know you do. It's hard. However, the thing is to finance or participate and support a mistake makes you feel worse that when they end
up
failing,
resent it, right?
Then you resent it.
Yeah. I almost co-signed the loan and my shrink talked me out of it. He goes,
good.
No. Mm-hmm. No. He's like, this is a want for her, not a need. And this kind of entitlement, you're breeding in her. This is your fault. And now what you're going to do is co-sign a loan and then be resentful, which again is all your fault.
And that would be a hard thing. I guess the dialogue that I needed to have with our said common friend was to say,
yeah, the one doing these a-holes.
Yep. I guess I support your decision. I don't agree with it. I worry about you. I care about you. I think you make mistakes with men. But if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. There's certain people in your life I don't want to be around because of what they're like, and that's the best I can do. So I feel like I'm being supportive by being honest and saying, I see what you want.
She's going to be looking for Mr. Goodbar, though, dude. I mean, it's getting worse and worse and worse to a degree that's scary. Like, I literally,
yeah.
After she got this text from this guy that was, like, psychotic. I mean, the guy was very bizarre, and she's like, well, he's going to jail, so he's really stressed out. I'm like, I swear to God, I go, what? And she's like, but it's not his fault. I'm like, girl, listen to what you're saying right now. And I know this is because of an abusive relationship with her mom, so I'm like, this girl's so smart, ironically, and such
so
a good
smart.
Person. And I'm like, I know that she's playing, and I'm like, honey, look, this is like an abusive parent thing. I'm showing. I'm like, here's what we, you know, you got to get into therapy. And no, what does she do? Buys a motorcycle and a motorhome, but then talks to me about money, but won't get in therapy.
Yeah.
I'm like, sell your motorhome, sell your motorcycle,
yep.
Get your ass in therapy.
Yeah.
Because you're going to end up, you know, dead, like
yep.
Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess the theme, it's like, you're right. You just got to kind of, you got to let people make their own mistakes. And then you got to look at like why you can't. And it's about control. It is about control.
Yeah.
It is. It's like, and I still haven't figured out, I'll be honest. I'm like, so she's got $80,000 worth of debt, but I know that I'm going to be like, I'll pay it. And then I'm like, no, you will not. But she keeps like, she keeps realizing these mistakes like after they've been made. So like she wanted to go to Sarah Lawrence. And
we all do though.
Yeah. I mean, that's how
the
you
hindsight.
Learn.
But
that's
I knew
the hindsight,
it was
50-50.
A mistake.
Yep.
So like with Sarah Lawrence, right? I go, Lauren, there are no grades. They have no grades and no majors. No, you don't understand. And the network and no, blah, blah, blah. Then she comes back to me and tells me the reason she needs a master's degree is because she has no major. I was like, you little shit. I told you this is why you can't go to this school. Now you're telling me this is why you need to go. Oh, my God. Okay.
But I guess when I look back at my own life, I guess I learned the most from the times that I had to hit the proverbial bottom and learn from there. Yeah. Because if I was averted every time, I wouldn't have learned a lesson or grown the nads to be able to have better judgment. And sadly, if that ends up being her $80,000 lesson, that's what it's going to cost for her to learn, if this is a lesson for her to learn.
Right.
And she'll do it anyway.
Scheme of things is not, it's not the end of the world.
It's just so much money, dude.
It is.
The student loan thing is major.
Now, will she get it without your co-signing?
People. Yeah, I'm sure she will. And she'll do it in installments. Like, I heard that she can get like a 20 and then a 30. Oh, I just want to die.
Has anyone who's providing her the loan, like, really explained to her what her payback responsibilities
no
are going to be?
She won't discuss it with me.
And I don't think she cares.
I love
about
you,
that.
But I'm not discussing it. But I mean, she doesn't want, you know, it was like, you can sign it or I'm not talking to you about it. And I was like, all right. What are you going to do, dude? What am I going to do? I feel like life is amazing. Like, I have two grown children. I have my brother and my sister. I really do. And I'm not saying children as in like they behave like children. I just mean, I literally have become the parent that they rebel against because there's no one else there to push up against. Mm-hmm. You know, when my brother has a party they shouldn't be having, it was at my house.
Yeah, you're the sounding board.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the one. It's like when this stuff happens, I don't know. I guess I just feel like, you know, stop. So, like, if you're engaging in this pattern with people where you're trying to get them to, you're trying to, you know, run interference or stop something from happening or save somebody from a bad behavior, unless it's killing them, like, and you can do an intervention, like, with an alcoholic or whatever, stop it. It's not going to work anyway. They're just going to make their mistakes, and it's just going to create tension. It's just going to hurt your relationship with them, and you're just going to feel, you know, deal with your own issues about why you need to stop it, which I'm trying to figure out right now.
Well said. Mm-hmm.
All right. So check this out. People often ask me how they can burn more calories throughout their day. And they think it's silly things like just taking the stairs. And while that certainly doesn't hurt, it's certainly not a solution. And it will make an extremely negligible impact on your calorie burn. But standing instead of sitting is huge. You will burn 1.5 times the calories when you stand instead of sit. And it's so much better for your posture. And this is why we are talking about Varidesk, who is our new sponsor. I love them so much. And basically, these guys will ship you a desk that's totally adjustable. It's an adjustable standing desk, and it sits on top of your existing furniture. So you don't have to throw away your desk. It doesn't cost a fortune. Models start at $275. And literally, this would be the equivalent, just replacing 4 hours of sitting with 4 hours of standing, to 130 additional calories per day. That's a big deal. That's a huge difference. So this is an affordable and efficient way to retrofit your desk to a stand-up desk. Just visit Varidesk.com for more information, and that's Variedesk.com. I have one. Love it. Love it. Okay, I love this new sponsor, Plated.com. Here's how it works. If you love to cook but aren't that great at it, or you love to cook but you don't have a ton of time, these guys have you covered. They have gourmet meals that are healthy and delicious. You can choose from any recipe you like, and once you do, they will deliver all of those ingredients pre-measured right to your door whenever you want. And even if you're not home to get the delivery, the box will keep everything fresh and cool until midnight on the day it arrives, even when it's warm outside. So all you have to do is go to plated.com/Jillian now, check it out, and you'll get free shipping with your first order. Again, chef quality gourmet healthy meals of your choosing delivered straight to your door, all the ingredients, 30 minutes or less to prepare. What are you waiting for? As I said, free shipping with the first order. That's plated.com/Jillian.
J.
Jillian, we have a very exciting guest with us today.
I know exactly who's here with us today.
It's Dr. Michelle Borba. She's an educational psychologist. She's the author of The Big Book of Parenting Solutions.
Incredible book, by the way. A must-have, moms and dads.
And Dr. Borba, I can't believe that this is right. Is this a typo? You've been on the Today Show 130 times.
Think of those airline miles.
Holy cow.
That is incredible.
Oh, my goodness.
It's always fun.
Oh, my gosh.
And you've worked with over a million educators and parents on five continents. I mean, to say that you're an expert is an understatement.
Understatement. Go to your wizard word.
Right.
So, a wizard. She's a wizard on many different topics.
But today.
Today. Go ahead, kiddo.
We're going to be talking about child bullying.
Now, this is a big deal. And first of all, I'm gonna throw this out right now, and I'll give you guys the information again. But you can follow Dr. Borba. I'm sorry, Dr. Borba. I'm going to fix it. You can follow Dr. Borba on Twitter, at Michelle Borba, B-O-R-B-A. She also has michelleborba.com, and she's got a new book coming out next year in May called The Unselfie. Oh, boy. The surprising role of empathy in preparing children for happiness and success. So, bullying, this is major. I mean, this is a big buzzword right now. Kids are killing themselves because they're being so bullied and brutalized in school. So, I mean, Dr. Borba, tell us, let's just, I think we all have a grasp of what bullying is, but can you give us kind of what's the legit definition here? How deep and broad does this go?
Oh, number one, I'm so glad you asked what is the definition, because everybody has a different connotation of it. And the first step to turning this around is getting on board together and knowing what it is. So here is the established definition from the U.S. Office of Education and the best experts in the world. First, it's always intentional mean behavior. It's not an accident. This is one child who's consciously, deliberately causing another kid pain. Second, it's always a power imbalance. It's two kids, or three or four, but the child who's being victimized cannot hold their own via size, power, status. And the other thing that's kind of important to know is it's usually repeated. So if it doesn't stop the first time, it continues. You put all of those three traits together, that's what bullying is, and it's far different than teasing.
Okay, now I was bullied as a kid, and it happened at a very particular time. It was junior high, and I'm wondering, and I thought I was alone with it, right? I was an overweight kid, and I was like, it's just me. I'm the school loser. And I didn't realize how big, as I've gotten older, I start to see, you know, everyone from close friends, massive celebrities, Tom Cruise coming out and talking about how big of a problem is this really? Because then we go, oh, it's the transgender teens. They're the ones that are, but it's much bigger than that, no?
You're right. It's what we now know is it's about a third of kids are bullied repeatedly at school.
Oh
now,
God.
Unfortunately, that stat varies by who does the statistic and who's measuring it. You also hit on something. You said middle school, and that's when bullying peaks. You also said overweight. That's one of the other categories. We now know who on the spectrum is most likely to be bullied: overweight, transgender, kids on the autism spectrum. There are certain children who are more likely to be victimized, but across the board, it can happen to anyone and anybody. And what we all need to do as a group of adults is realize the key. Bullying is a learned behavior. If it's learned, it can be unlearned. Bullying is also situational. It doesn't happen every place on the school ground. Bullies are very cunning and manipulative. They pick their targets, and they pick where and when. So the key question, if you think your child is being bullied, stay calm. Oh, my God, you want to kill the kid, but
stay calm. God, you do.
And then your next say is, where did it happen and when? And you will get an amazing bit of information, because it usually happens in places that are least likely to be adult supervised. For instance, 43% of kids on school grounds are bullied in bathrooms. Why?
Right.
Very rarely is there an adult there.
Right.
Backs of school buses, you can't see them. Fringes of the playgrounds, hallways. So if you know and you ask your child, where do you feel safest at school? Where do you feel least safe? You'll get a key index of where's the bullying usually happening, and then you can create a safety plan of where to avoid spots, or who to walk with. It's an amazing, just simple little question that'll help you as the parent.
That's so interesting. Huh. I never really realized that because I used to spend in junior high, I would have lunch in my teacher's classroom, Mrs. Kronstadt. And I was like, dude, I didn't even go. I didn't even venture onto the quad.
Well, you know what? And unfortunately, that happens with so many kids. Cafeterias are a hot button issue of exclusion. So you can also ask your child from any age, draw a map of either the playground or the cafeteria, and then you say, where do you sit? Who next? Where do the friends sit around you? What you'll see is, does he have any support system, or is this child sitting or playing all by himself? Many high school kids tell me, I've done focus groups with hundreds of kids all over the world asking them about bullying, and if I'm in Colombia versus Taipei versus the United States, I get the same stuff from every child. The place where kids say they feel safest at school is a library, and I say, why? And the kids say, well, first of all, it's quiet so you can breathe. Second of all, librarians are usually strict, so they watch you. And third is bullies usually don't read, so they don't come in there.
Wow.
So I'm like, oh, my God, they nailed it. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, my. Now, you have – Autumn has a list of questions for me. And this one, you know, some are so obvious to me. This one is not so obvious. How do I know if my child is bullied? But this goes along with, why don't kids tell if they're bullied? So
yeah.
I told my mom. So this is surprising to me. Are kids ashamed of this, or are
yes,
they not saying
and you are,
something?
You know, first of all, I love that you said this, that you told your mother, because it's rare that children do. In fact, by around the third grade, they stop telling, which is the first thing is when parents say, but I can't believe it, he never told me. Don't expect if a child isn't saying they're bullied that they're not. Why? Good question. Kids say, here's the four top reasons. First, embarrassment or humiliation. So if you don't have a relationship with the parent, you're going to have a problem. Many kids also say, the adult didn't believe me. For gosh sake, please believe your child. Listen to them and say, oh. Or the other thing that the kids say is, I'm fearful of retaliation, and that's a huge legitimate concern. Okay. If I tell my mom, I tell my dad, he's going to call the bully's parents, it's only going to make things worse, and sometimes it does. And the final thing that's really interesting is that kids say that advice we told them is ineffective, which means we need to get educated. Don't worry about it. It'll get better tomorrow is one thing we tell a lot of kids, and it rarely does because bullying is repeated. So your next question is, how do you know? What you're looking for is a change in your child's behavior that usually lasts. And it doesn't mean that it could be bullying. It could be anything like stress. Depression. But it means if there's a lasting change that's different from your child's norm, lasts every day for at least 2 weeks, something is hugely wrong and you need to look into it. Or you watch your child in front of the computer and all of a sudden you see knee-jerk reactions when a text comes in. He covers it up or he pulls the plug. Any of those could be something is going on. You watch the child run home from school. What does he do? He immediately goes to the kitchen and tries to eat something. Boys, a lot of times, he's not eating.
Oh, my God, that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
I was part depression, though, too. But, yeah.
Yeah, they run home and use the bathroom because they're afraid to use the school restroom. Oh. You're looking for changes in kids' behavior or a switch. All of a sudden, he doesn't want to leave your sight. He changes a different route going to school. Watch him if you drop him off. Which way does he go into the school? And he used to walk in the front corridor, and now he's going all the way around. There's certain things that we overlook. If you really know your child, you begin to see the signs, and they start adding up that something's not right.
Now, this question I personally would love an answer to because I know I don't handle this well, and I remember my mom tried to handle this for me, and And it didn't go well for her. And it was, if I find out my child's bullied, you know, what do I do? And my mom contacted the school, and they denied it was happening. This was a high-end private school. And she just ended up pulling me out and putting me in public school. And I was the, quote, loser, but I wasn't being aggressively bullied. And then with my kid, when I started to hear stuff, and again, they're in this high-end private school that's super PC, and it's like I got to a point where I was like, if that kid touches you one more time, knock his socks off. And my partner was like, do not say that, honey. And I was like, no, enough. I'm like, it's self-defense. I'm sick of this. And I told the teachers, I was like, dude, step in. And the schools don't seem to do much. What do you do as a parent?
Well, as a parent, first of all, the first thing you do above all else is immediately, after the end of this podcast, go on to your school's website and look to see something. Do they have a policy of bullying? Do they have a report form? Do they have something that's clearly an anti-bullying policy? 50 states have now regulated that that school has to have a policy. If they don't, you should be concerned.
Oh, wow. Okay. I had no idea. All right. And so you should, so once you know the policy, then you should get a plan together
then
with the school.
Then you can do something about it. Most schools should have a place that if your child is bullied, there are steps that are regulated. Here's what to do. Or ideally, we learned this. I spent a lot of time, unfortunately, working in schools with school shootings. And what we discovered is that and by the way, one of the biggest causes we're doing is that when we track kids who are school shooters, almost all of them had repeatedly, unmercifully been bullied from a long haul and nobody stepping in. At one point, what happens to a child who is bullied is they flip their roles and become the bully.
Right.
13% of kids flip roles. Now, what do you do if nobody's doing anything about it? First, form a support group of like-minded parents and go in so you're not alone. Go in and say, hey, let's do something about it. You can also check your state regulations. I'm in California. The U.S. Office of Education says across the board, here's what to do. But you can also go to each one of your states and look up the Office of Education for the state, print it off, and say, hey, this is what's supposed to happen. These are the regs in our particular state. Why isn't it? Now, there could be that there are policies going, and it's clearly there in the school, in which case you just need to get educated and say, okay, my child is bullying. Or bullied, what do I do? And what are the premise? Go in there, always calmly. That's the hard start, but go in calmly.
That is the hard part.
Say,
yep.
If you can, you bring in evidence. Because the problem is, remember, bullying happens 85% of the time when an adult isn't present. Chances are the teacher isn't aware of it because the teacher's not seeing it.
Right.
If you can find another child who can vouch for your kid, if you can find something that's any kind of an evidence, you bring it in. If you can't, then you track it. Here are the actual dates and here are the times, and you bring in the calendar. And then you say, what can we do together to make this work so my child feels safe? Start the we dialogue and watch to see what they do. If they don't go do anything, most schools will, but if they don't, then you go up the ladder. You go from the teacher to the principal to the district office, you go up to the California State Department.
Oh, I love that. Now, you've answered a lot of these questions for me. I have kind of a personal question from a personal observation. And my mom got me into martial arts when I was about 12. And I didn't get particularly good at it slightly competent in it for at least a year and a half. But when I was about 13 and a half, I had this blue belt test, and I had to break these two boards with a sidekick, and I did, and let me tell you, I walked into, I think it was eighth grade or whatever it was, the next day, and I was like, let's go, and I was ready to fight, I had it, and I will tell you, the oddest thing happened, no one picked on me, and they never really picked on me again. Do you think that part of it is the way that we are carrying ourselves? I often wondered if it was that.
You're just like the textbook example for all of this stuff. Yes! They've actually done this. This is an amazing study with Deborah Peffler and Wendy Craig. They spent hours and hours and hours videoing kids out on the playground. Then they'd review the tapes, and what they were trying to figure out is which kids were most likely to be bullied, not they couldn't hear what they were saying, but they discovered a commonality. One of the highest correlations is a kid who looks vulnerable. Mm. By the way, they've done the same thing. They've actually put videotapes of women up to prisoners who were predators or rapists, just images of the women going across and asking predators, which one would you have picked on? Voila, each one. Why? Because she looks vulnerable.
Ugh.
What you looked before was vulnerable. What you just said after was you were confident. So the first step that I teach kids is always hold your head up. And I teach starting at 2 and 3, little teeny ones. Always look at the color of the talker's eyes. Why? Because if you hold your head up and you look at the color of the talker's eyes, you're not thinking, I need to look strong, because you can't do that as a child when you're just in meltdown mode. But instead, you automatically get into the habit of looking at the color of the talker's eyes. It makes your whole body look stronger.
Key one
is helping kids have strong body language. That confidence really gets off and makes you appear less vulnerable, so you're less likely to be targeted. There's no guarantee, but what you happen to you is very true for what the research says.
So you really have to kind of empower your kids with these kinds of body language techniques. And what do you think about getting them in martial arts? Or is that like, what are your thoughts?
If it helps, look. If it helps, what you're looking for is a confidence booster for any kid anyway.
Okay.
For some kids, martial arts is going to be fabulous. For another kid, horseback riding, believe it or not, is going to, because I'm good at it. Now look at me riding a horse, because they have that sense of confidence and true self-esteem. I don't care what it is. Find some way to empower your child. And second of all, empower your child with strong body language. I teach calm. I've taught kids hundreds and hundreds of strategies, but I always say at the end of it, which strategy helps? And they say, hands down, calm. C-A-L-M. C is if you're picked on, and we start by teaching your kid when you're teased, not bullied. Because teasing means you can hold your own and tell your friend, stop it or cut it out.
Okay.
It's real hard to do that face-to-face with a bully. So start by helping kids, even siblings. By the way, bullying in siblings is a huge issue.
So
stay cool is the C, because you want to stay cool. If you look upset, you whine, you pout, you cry, bullies win because they want power.
Got it.
A is to learn to assert yourself. Teach your kid one comeback line. Cut it out. Stop it. Get real. I don't care, but it's simple with a period. That's it.
Okay.
L is look the kid in the eye. At least hold your head up. And M is make your voice sound like you mean it. Be firm. Be strong. Listen to my voice. Cut it out. Now listen. Cut it out. Which one do you think that kid's going to listen to? So you're really teaching social-emotional skills to your kid.
Wow.
And those skills are going to help your child anywhere and anytime, including the workplace later on.
Okay, I know you have to go. Last question, and I know this is probably a broader question, or it goes beyond just a couple of minutes, but I can't help but ask it. And I think we all are like, oh, my kid's bullied, my kid's bullied, my kid's bullied. But no one ever says my kid's the bully. And I mean, someone's kid's the frickin' bully. So what do you do if your kid is the bully? I mean, no one wants to hear that about their kid. I mean, I watch my kids pretty darn closely, especially because they do bully one another. And I really stop it instantaneously. And I explain, how would you feel if someone did that to you? Apologize. But I'm not a doctor like you are. I mean, what are you supposed to do if your kid is the bully? No one wants to hear that.
Well, first of all, if you acknowledge that your child is a bully, you immediately take yourself out for a spa treatment, because it's the hardest thing in the world to finally say to yourself, hey, something's not right with my child. I honor that person for saying it. Second of all, don't wait, because bullying becomes an entrenched habit. The sooner you can stop it, the better, because it's learned. Now what do? You go to the school and you find, ideally, not necessarily the teacher, but a counselor, a psychologist, a social worker. Why? Because they're trained in affective education and social skills. Now, the first thing is everybody's going to go, what's the skill my child needs? And that's the problem. There is no cookie-cutter approach to saying, my child is a bully, therefore do this. Your key that you want to do is dig deeper and say to yourself, what is motivating his behavior? Is he bullying because he needs attention? He has low self-esteem. He has no impulse control, or he lacks empathy. He's doing it to protect himself. What's the reason? It could be all the above. Right. Once you know the reason, I guarantee there is a strategy, there's a behavior intervention plan that you can immediately apply to it and teach him how to replace the aggression with a more pro-social behavior. Takes a while. New behaviors take around 21 days of repetition, so don't go say, okay, no problem. The longer he's doing it, the harder it's going to be. You monitor the child. You let him know that you're watching him. but for heaven's sakes, also give him opportunities to do good. So he sees himself as a good-hearted, caring person, and he'll begin to change his identity structure, and then he's got a new way of behaving, and what you'll have is a child who now is going to be less likely to use that behavior and more likely to be empathetic with other kids.
That's so interesting, because that's some of the same advice I've been given on sibling rivalry. It's like, well, are they competing, you know, for attention? Are they feeling, you know, insecure? They're little, so they're being impulsive, you know, and then how can you reward them when they're kind to each other? It's, oh my gosh. So, you know, I'm getting it. I'm not getting it on the schoolyard yet, but they are doing it to each other. And this, these little things that you've been saying that we've been trying to do have really been helping. Dr. Borba, I know we need to let you go, so I cannot thank you enough. Everyone out there, get her book, The Big Book of Parenting Solutions. It's invaluable. You can follow her on Twitter at Michelle Borba. You can go to her website, www.michelleborba.com, and I cannot wait for the new book, The Unselfie. Dear God, is that, are we ready for that? So thank you so much, and I hope we get to have you back. I'm so sorry we were a few minutes late. I was doing a segment with Dr. Mom, everybody, and we ran a little long. What a surprise. So thank you so, so much, and please get back to your book. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a great day. You know what? Honestly, it's funny because you don't ever want to think your kid's the bully, but when you hear what might make a kid a bully, I look at my kid and I go, they have impulse control. They're a little, are you kidding me? They feel insecure. Are you kidding me? They want attention. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you look at that, it's not because your kid's a bad person.
No, it's just exerting out what they need in the wrong way.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that.
I love that too. And you know what I found interesting though, is that the parents of the bully, you know, those are the people that I always wanted to go to. When Jack had his little incident at his old school last year, I blamed the parents and I kind of waited around for them almost like they knew or sent their kid off.
Like, this
and they
is 40, might, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm going to go off. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Do you remember that movie?
Yes, I remember very well. And, you know, the parents ended up being very nice, and so they didn't know. What do? You got to educate, use the system.
It's hard, dude.
So hard.
It's hard. And I think also it's hard for people to look at because I remember there was this mom, this reality TV show. It was like a Housewives thing, right? And I don't watch the Housewives. And everyone's going, sure you don't. I really don't. I would be honest if I did. But she called her kids, I guess, I'll bleep this, but assholes. I don't know the context, but I heard her and everyone went crazy, right? And she was like, well, they were acting like little assholes. And I was like, come on. Everybody from time to time was like, oh my God, they're being such, you know, X, Y, or Z. Kids are human. They're not little angels. They're little mini human beings with egos that haven't been socialized with, you know, with impulse control. Like, they have to be taught empathy, kindness. They're little raw human beings.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean they're not angels as in perfect, sweet little angels. They're little people and they've got all the same propensities towards aggression and kindness and love like everybody else.
Well, look at our Disneyland incident with Jack pulling pants down. He had his pants pulled down the day before.
We did a whole segment on that.
Right. And he executed it on you because and then he said later, well, she was teasing me. And we were like, well, Jack, you guys always tease each other. That's your relationship. That's the relationship you and Jill have. You have fun with each other, and you took it to another level. Now he's in trouble, and he had someone do it to him the day before, and it became this thing, and everyone was acting out things in the moment. But, you know, sometimes you don't have time to psychoanalyze it really deeply, but it seemed pretty vending machine. He got his pants pulled down. He took the information the next day of the best place in the world, Disneyland.
Where are the cameras?
Where were
the cameras?
Look, it's Mickey and Jill Michaels.
But,
well, we can end on that.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.